This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
My next guest is always, everything's always easy for him, and that is Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette, who covers the Steelers and the NFL. And Brian, I got to ask you before we get to the NFL and the Steelers, since you're a Pitt alum and Pitt grad, are you on the side of the Pitt fan base that says the city game should be played, or on the side that says it doesn't matter and it's an irrelevant game and who cares about Duke game?
Oh, Paul, I'm glad you asked this because it's one of the few things that I really feel strongly about. Like you said, someone who used to cover Pitt, a Pitt alum. I'm also a Pittsburgher. I'm from here originally, and I've always lived here. And I hate that the city game is kind of falling by the wayside here. To me, it was something that, when I was growing up and I kind of first started understanding what college basketball was and why people enjoyed it, why it mattered, I could understand that there were two teams, both of which took me a 20-minute drive to get to. If I wanted to go watch them play, I knew one was a lot better than the other, and I was going to care about that team more. But I thought it was always fun when Pitt and Duquesne would get together, and I also enjoyed covering those games because it's a heck of a lot better than seeing Pitt play Morgan State. And I think if you're really a big Pitt fan, you care about all the Pitt basketball games, not just the conference games, whether that's the ACC or the Big East. So those games, within reason, might as well be as entertaining as possible, and Duquesne is a higher bar to clear for that than Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Well, I think the thing about it is, yeah, exactly. That's I think what's so frustrating is that there's so many games that they bring in that are just, the teams are so, they're so either so bad or so uninteresting. It seems like you should be able to find a place to play Duquesne every year, especially since, if you think about it, those other teams really don't help your resume. At least
Jamie Dixon even was willing to play Duquesne every year, and he was allergic to playing good teams in the non-conference portion of the schedule. Even he didn't let the city game die, Paul.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'll tell you what's amazing is how angry some of these Pitt fans have gotten at me because I just refuse to see how it's different than Penn State, because it just is. It just is. So,
yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
Well, I guess we could start with the rules change or possible rules change. Brian, I know a lot of people have talked about this 4th and 15 rule. To me, it just feels like a gimmick. I understand, the percentages are, I think, about 25% on 4th and 15s or 3rd and 15s or whatever, versus like 2 or 3% for the onside kick. But my feeling is it should be really, really hard to get the ball back after you score. That's a part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, and first of all, let's stop calling it a 4th and 15 because you didn't have three downs before it to get there. It's really a 5th and 15 if we're going to use that rule change in 2020 and beyond. It's a 5th and 15 with no sixth down after. You either get it or you don't. But I'm with you on this. I think there are compelling arguments to both sides. I just do think it feels a little bit too gimmicky for the NFL, and I don't have a great reason why. Maybe I'm just getting old at the soon-to-be age of 29, and I've got a kid now, so I'm really get off your lawn about everything. But I don't like this idea. And, you know, Ray Fittipaldo, who I work with at the Post-Gazette, one of my beat partners covering the Steelers, he had a pretty good retort to that by saying, you know, you might have been against the two-point conversion, too, when they introduced that in the NFL, and everyone's fine with that now, which is a good point. But still, I can't wrap my head around losing possession by scoring and then having a chance to get it back by going back on offense. It seems too bizarre, and I have to imagine defensive players would hate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a little different than the two-point conversion. Two-point conversion makes sense because the extra points all just became so automatic. At least with the two-point conversion, you know, I wish they would get rid of the extra point. And basically, you have to go for two every time. But that's just me.
Yeah, that's one jelly bean that I would put in the counter of the positives for this 4th and 15 role, or as I like to call it, 5th and 15, is anytime you can do less of special teams and kickoffs, and in this case, onside kicks, I'm kind of for that. But I would much rather them see to a tweak to onside kicks than just revert to getting another chance to go on offense to get the ball back.
I think that that's a good point. I mean, I don't like it. Just feels like a gimmick. And you know, I love these guys that are basically talking about how wonderful it is that it came from the, you know, one of those alphabet soup leagues. I mean, the whole point of those leagues, they're all, you know, they need gimmicks to keep people interested, and this is just one of them, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for thinking outside the box, but this one just seems like a bridge too far for me, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely that. I would agree with that. It just seems silly. You look at now, you know, we were talking a little bit about the Steelers. I was talking with Chris Carter about quarterback contracts and Ben. And I look at, for instance, what the Steelers are going to pay Ben Roethlisberger this year. And I wonder if they had a cheaper quarterback, you know, that was, I mean, I don't know how, we don't know how good Ben's going to be, but I really believe that had they signed a veteran quarterback of some degree of competence, they would have saved $25 million to spend elsewhere and make some other areas better. And I don't know that they would have been that terribly different at quarterback. I mean, do you agree that, and we're looking at Dak Prescott, do you agree that some of these quarterback contracts are out of control?
Yeah, that's a pretty big picture idea to kick around there, Paul. I mean, obviously with Ben Roethlisberger's tenure in Pittsburgh and certainly his latest contract, there's no putting that toothpaste back in the tube, so to speak. But I think this time a year ago when they got that deal done, in a season where, yes, he was coming off a lot of interceptions and turnovers, but he was also coming off leading the league in passing. And I think everybody was on board with that deal for the most part at the time, because when it was done, if I recall correctly, there was a lot of talk about the window is this and the window is that for the Steelers to win another Super Bowl in the Ben Roethlisberger era. And there's no Ben Roethlisberger era if Ben Roethlisberger's not your quarterback. So I can't necessarily fault their thinking for just kind of keeping it simple, more or less, and saying, we know what we've gotten this guy. We've won it with him before. Yes, he was a much younger man, but we're going to take the proven commodity at maybe a higher cost behind door one rather than open ourselves up to the Pandora's box that's behind door two of trying to find another quarterback that can win you the Super Bowl. Like, I look at Jimmy Garoppolo, Paul, and maybe this is one of those weird things where, like, okay, he got the San Francisco 49ers to the Super Bowl. Surely if you get there, you can eventually win one. But he does strike me as a guy that is just never really going to be able to win the big one because he just doesn't have that it factor. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, but I think we kind of saw that with his play in the most recent Super Bowl, that he did hold them back a little bit.
Well, and I think the other thing about it, I've said this a couple of times. The other guy that comes to mind is Jared Goff, who I think might have one of the worst contracts that's been signed in NFL history. I just don't know that he's that good. Especially when you consider what they're paying him. And I don't know that, he justifies that contract.
No, and the Rams have made some poor decisions, really, since getting to that Super Bowl against the Patriots. There's the Goff deal, the Todd Gurley deal that's already backfired on them, making him the highest-paid running back in the league when he was dealing with some injury issues himself. So it's a delicate game in the NFL with the whole salary cap deal. And I think overpaying for a quarterback is one of those things that at least right now, the state of the league, you just kind of have to do it. We're seeing just how much more valuable it is to find a good young quarterback like a Patrick Mahomes or a Lamar Jackson, because if you can, win and win big before you get to the point where you have to pay them big, maybe that's your best way to construct a Super Bowl winning roster.
Yeah, no, no question about it. I mean, I think
that's why teams love trading into the back of the first round to draft these quarterbacks like a Jordan Love, because you do get that extra fifth year to get everything you can out of them before you have to come to contract time.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you saw this. Pete Prisco did his top 100 players. And he only had four Steelers in his top 100 players in the NFL. Obviously T.J. Watt is one of them. Cam Hayward, Bud Dupree, and Juju Smith-Schuster. What are your thoughts on that? I think that Juju Smith-Schuster should not be in there, and Minkah Fitzpatrick should be.
I don't have a real hot take one way or the other on his list. I mean, these things are so subjective, and especially the NFL, more so than a sport like hockey or basketball, it's really tough to compare people between different positions, let alone different sides of the ball. So, whatever. Four Steelers in it seems fine to me when you look at what their record's been and not being in the postseason the last couple years. The Juju thing is interesting. I know you just said you don't think he should be on there. I wasn't particularly surprised to see him, because it seems like there's kind of a gap between how national football media and fans view Juju Smith-Schuster versus local people here in Pittsburgh see him, and that's maybe one reason why you get him on an NFL.com or CBS top 100 list like this. But I'll certainly agree with you that Minkah Fitzpatrick very much deserved a place on there for the most part. When a guy gets chosen as an All-Pro, he has the respect of people in the league that matter. So you're going to see a lot of those kind of guys on these top 100 lists. And quarterbacks are weird to deal with, too, because we all know that if you were doing a real top 100 of who are the most valuable players in the league, you're going to have a whole lot of quarterbacks on there.
Right, but I thought it was interesting that Ben was not on that list.
And that doesn't necessarily surprise me either. I mean, the guy didn't play last year, and in the six quarters that he did, he wasn't very good. So if you're ranking guys from a present perspective, using a lot of 2019 as your guide and trying to project a little bit of how someone's going to be in 2020, I can't knock someone for thinking that Ben Roethlisberger is over the hill and is going to struggle for the rest of his career coming off that injury.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the larger point about the, $36 million. But then again, they signed it before they knew he was going to get injured. Last one I'd have for you. It's a question that I threw out. Actually, it was thrown to me in my mailbag, and I'm going to throw it to you. James Conner. Should the Steelers sign him to a long-term deal?
No, I don't think so. I just don't think that's the way to manage a backfield in today's NFL. I mentioned the Todd Gurley deal earlier with the Rams. I mean, even as good and productive as he was, it wasn't a wise move to give him big money. We'll see if the Cowboys and Zeke Elliott or the Panthers and Christian McCaffrey can kind of buck that. But I just go back to the two teams that were in the Super Bowl last year, Paul. They prioritized a whole heck of a lot of other positions over running back and essentially rolled out late rounders and undrafted free agents at that position. They had offensive lines and passing games that made those guys look pretty good in their scenarios. So that's kind of how I would build a roster. I don't think that you need to pay a running back big money in 2020. I don't even necessarily think you need to use a real high draft pick one on one either. But I'd rather build your running back room through the draft and with trying to find some hidden gems rather than latching on to a veteran, if you want to call James Conner that at this point, in his still young career, but one that I don't necessarily think will last here beyond 2020.
Well, Brian, I appreciate you taking some time and breaking it all down for us, and now hopefully you can, you know, do something productive, like go on to Twitter and help Craig Meyer fend off all the angry Duquesne fans that don't like his take about Pitt Duquesne.
Oh, I didn't know that Craig needed me to come to his aid. Well, you know what? I'll tell my my replacement on Pitt football, Johnny McGonigal, to get on that.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, he can help that too. You know, we can make it a team effort, I guess. Of course,
exactly.
What I've done is make sure that I go in there and throw some zingers to fuel the fire even more so they attack Craig even more.
Oh, yeah, I'll just throw a gif in there and then run away.
Yeah, because he deserves it every so often. You got to give him, you know, you got to bust his chops a little bit, right?
Yep.
So, all right, Brian. Hey, I appreciate it, man. Have a good one.
Sure thing. See you, Paul.
All right, Brian Becko, Post-Gazette. I'm Paul Zeiss. It's 93.7 The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.